Are you tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. This week, we welcome back Ray Light, the General Secretary of the Revolutionary Organization of Labor, USA. That's ROLUSA. And it's a revolutionary working class organization that fights for working class power and the elimination of all human exploitation. Ray Light Newsletter is a regular publication of ROLUSA, and you can find back issues for a year at the Soapbox People's Network. And Ray and I will be chatting about a topic that is near and dear to my heart, the so-called left in this country and how they have abdicated any responsibility of accountability because of the Democratic president in office. And we'll also be chatting about Ukraine and the geopolitical implications regarding Russia and those relations. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Ray Light. Ray Light, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
I'm so happy to be back with you, Cindy.
Long time no talk. So this is part two of a segment we started, but they're not really related, so I don't know why I'm saying that.
It is related because
everything's related.
The class struggle is related.
Yeah.
the system of capitalism that has to be replaced, to put it gently, that's all involved with all of these things. So in that sense, but we are talking about different branches of the struggle.
Right. Well, we always like to connect the dots in Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Mm-hmm. But recently in March, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox and the Soapbox People's Network, we initiated a call for people to come to washed up D.C. and protest the wars because, like we mentioned in a previous interview you did, the anti-war movement has practically completely dissolved since Obama's been president. And we thought we needed to do it this year because already there's the presidential election fervor for 2016 gearing up. And we know we lose so many activists to bourgeois political, I just want to say theater, because it's not really super relevant to us. But what is relevant is we lose a lot of support because the people get sucked up into these campaigns. So anyway, we had the action called Spring Rising. It was about 4 or 5 days in Washington, D.C. of different events. And the Revolutionary Organization of Labor, USA, was one of the supporters, one of the endorsers of the events, and brought out people to Washington, D.C. And you wanted to talk a little bit about the Spring Rising that we called it.
Yes, and let me say that as the general secretary of that small organization, that my confidence in you was a key factor in my own promoting our participation in the Spring Rising, and you were actually acknowledged even by the other groups, most of which I call opportunist groups.
Right.
But they were principled enough to acknowledge the fact that you were the initiator of the effort. And you're the kind of quality leader that deserves to be followed in most cases. But, of course, everyone needs to be criticized as well. But that was an awful lot of the reason that I was favorably disposed to us participating. And then, not as much the thinking behind it that you just raised, but just the fact that at times you have to fight. You know, in other words, you never know exactly when the people are finally going to see the light.
Mm-hmm.
And have had enough. And so the idea that there hadn't been an anti-war demonstration in washed up the seat, I think you call it.
Washed up the seat.
In a long time.
Right.
And so the idea of showing up and waging the struggle. I guess the thing that, and I participated in part of it personally as well, and I had the opportunity to hear you and others speak at in front of the White House. And the White House was an inspiring backdrop for your speech because you exposed the occupant, the current occupant of the White House, without showing any patronizing toward a man of color occupying it. You also didn't show any chauvinism. You just clear-eyed, clearly exposed the vicious role that Barack Obama plays at the helm of this vicious U.S. empire. And unfortunately, not a lot of the other speakers had that same level of clarity and principle that you showed. But I was interested to hear what your own thoughts were on why you initiated at the time. But there are times when we just have to fight back.
Right.
And I'm a basketball fan, and sometimes the team that doesn't have the best players wins because they have the fight. And there are times when you're fighting against tyranny where you just have to fight back. So I think that combination. So I'm glad that we participate, and I'm glad that you pushed us, really, by your own initiative. And we need a hell of a lot more initiative to stop imperialist war, especially imperialist wars that are waged by our own imperialists here in the motherland of the U.S. Empire.
Well, you mentioned basketball. I just have to say, during this, at the time of this interview, I am actually mildly interested in basketball because we have a local team in the playoffs. But this, I want to say, we're recording this interview in June, and I'm just like, why are there still basketball playoffs happening in June?
Yeah,
so I'm mildly interested.
Yeah, but the answer is very simple. It's private profit. Mm. That's why it's still going on. Yeah.
So anyway, that was just an aside because I do live in Northern California, and the Golden State Warriors are in the finals or whatever, whatever they call them. Not doing very well at the time. So anyway, the Spring Rising, you brought something up that I just wanted to comment on, was that we were the organizers, and there were a few main ones, but then there were people who, like you said, are opportunists. Mm-hmm. They don't want to actually do any organizing or contribute any resources to the event, but they'll come in with their political theater and, you know, brightly colored clothes and be in all the pictures and everything. Yeah. But one of the problems that we have with the so-called anti-war movement in the United States, that it is so partisan. And that even organizations that don't affiliate with Democrats, they fear a Republican. You know, to me, what difference, especially in foreign policy, what difference has Obama been from the Bush administration?
I mean, you're so right about that. It was interesting to see, you know, people talk about the Democrats are better than the Republicans. And I raised with them, well, if you look at the 2012 presidential election, there was only one Republican candidate that could not take on Obama on the question that Republicans had the biggest difference with Obama on, supposedly, which was health care. And that man's name was Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
And Obamacare is Romney care.
Mm-hmm.
So Romney ended up getting the nomination. So you would think if the ruling class really wanted to punish Obama, if he had really done anything for the average man and woman and child, if he had done anything for the 99%, and Wall Street wanted to punish him, they would have picked somebody, surely, other than Mitt Romney, who was the architect of Obamacare. And so that really does give, certainly should give even the Democrats who think that Obama really wants to do the right thing a little pause for thought. And then, of course, the TPP.
Right.
And Fast Track exposes utterly just how supportive Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and the demonic Republicans, from their point of view, are of none other than President Barack Obama, for whom they are fighting might and main to give Fast Track authority. So I think that it was disappointing to me that there were as few speakers that had your fight and your principle in exposing the current head of the U.S. Empire. I remember when Barack Obama was running for president in 2008, that Mumia Abu-Jamal, the outstanding black journalist who's been on death row in Pennsylvania for almost 30 years.
And recently literally fighting for his life and fighting to get care in prison to save his life.
And since we mentioned him, we should urge people to take action in his defense. But Mumia Abu-Jamal, just because he's another one of the rare principled leftists in the United States, he raised that people need to remember that Barack Obama is running for president of the big white nation in the world. that was so profound, you know, so profoundly said in such few words. On the question of this peace demonstration, it was a very disappointing in terms of the actual, I think it was Saturday, the March 21st. It was, you know, just the name was a nice one about spring rising because
right.
It was right at the beginning of spring. But on Saturday, March 21st, there really were, I don't think, more than maybe 600 people at that.
It was very small.
Very small, that demonstration.
We were disappointed. The organizers definitely were disappointed.
Yeah. And I think that, but again, I think that the idea that you initiated it and there was a fight, there was a presence, there was an effort. I think that was a positive thing.
It's been really hard since Obama's been president because I've tried to do a lot of things. Mm-hmm. You know, a couple of camps in D.C., a camp on Martha's Vineyard, you know, when he goes on vacation there, and, you know, many things we've tried to organize, and it's been super hard. I don't know, in a recent interview we did about TPP, he's just been such an utter gift to the powers that be, to the military-industrial complex, to Wall Street, to other profiteers and capitalists. But when we were organizing for Spring Rising, we had a debate within the organizing group, a discussion. Some of the people wanted to just keep it focused on the Middle East because it was happening around the anniversary of Shock and Awe in 2003. Mm-hmm. But there were many of us who thought that we should include the increasing hostilities between the U.S. and NATO and Ukraine against Russia and Putin. So, I thought we left the Cold War far behind us. Right. And as a person born in 1957, as a Cold War baby, the first at least 30 years of my life was, I don't want to say consumed by, but really a lot of focus was on between the tensions between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, especially nuclear tensions. So to see this spark up again is it's troubling for the present and the future, but it also brings up a lot of stuff from the past. So I know as you are an expert on the Soviet Union and U.S. relations, and you know, that aspect of U.S. foreign policy. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, let me say this first, that as we are having the interview, the word has come that President Barack Obama is sending about another 500 or so troops openly into Iraq. Mm-hmm. And they openly have about 3,000 there now. And that doesn't include the vast numbers that are at the largest embassy in the world of the United States.
The mercenaries.
So you know, I just want to add that we're not talking about a president who has really had peace established anywhere.
Right, deserved a Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, that's, yeah, right, exactly. That's, talk about wishful thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in relation to the Russia and Putin, it's a very dangerous situation, as you know. And it's not just dangerous because the Russians have some major weapons still at their disposal. It's mainly dangerous because U.S. imperialism is pushing right up against Russia. And the effort to have the Ukraine become part of the European Union was just a huge step that's followed so many other steps of where Russia has been assaulted by the West in this period. And because Nikita Khrushchev, who was the ultimate opportunist, the ultimate revisionist, had given Crimea to the Ukraine, and the Ukraine, the Crimeans, clearly, almost universally wanted to be part of Russia.
Right.
And they expressed that in the poll that was taken there, in the vote that was taken, and eventually Putin responded to their desire, and they became part of Russia, which was the first step in that direction in many years, and it shook up especially U.S. imperialism, but even the European imperialist powers. One thing that I found striking is that even a bourgeois expert in Soviet affairs who's been used by the United States over the years, a Princeton professor, his name escapes me right now, wrote a very scathing expose of the U.S. and the Western European backing for this fascist force that is now the government in Kiev and in the Ukraine. And it was striking because it was in The Nation. The Nation's been a magazine that's been an apologist for Obama, and to see a man further to the right than they are,
mm-hmm.
really exposing the guy they've supported, Obama, around this question,
mm-hmm.
was an indication of just how dangerous the situation is. So here we are in the United States, the people of the United States are being fed the line that Putin has been aggressive. Putin was criticized, and according to this Princeton professor, he was being criticized within Russia for being too soft on the United States.
Right.
And if you remember, shortly before the reversal in the Ukraine, when Yanukovych was driven out with CIA backing, corrupt as he was,
mm-hmm.
he was no great loss, but the issue was to reverse his decision to go with Russia rather than with the European Union. And really, since then, the question of Russia being the aggressor has been perpetrated by the U.S. But at the time, Putin had saved Obama right. When Obama had painted himself into the corner and was going to have to face the Congress on the question of going into Syria,
right.
And the Congress, because they were getting overwhelming popular opposition to going into Syria, was going to have to tell Obama, niet, mm-hmm. you know. And so Putin had saved his chestnuts, pulled Obama's chestnuts out of the fire, and almost immediately after that, Obama and U.S. imperialism led this aggressive assault against Russia and Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an indication not of U.S. strength, but of U.S. weakness, that it's so desperate, the U.S. economically, politically, and militarily is so desperate that they couldn't even have a period in which they took advantage of better relations with Putin and,
right.
and Russia. So, but at the same time, that desperation is something that should concern the people who listen to your radio show,
yeah.
and really any concerned citizen of the world, because it's not like they're going to plan when a world war rises up, or you know, a war of major powers against each other, because there's a constant war that the U.S. empire is waging against oppressed peoples mm-hmm. in many parts of the world, especially across the Middle East in this period, and now in Africa. But the fact of the matter is that a major world war could easily begin around this struggle with Russia. In the more recent period, the G7 countries just met, and for the moment at least, U.S. imperialism has been able to get the European Union countries and Japan to back their aggressive attacks on Russia, and that. But at some point, Russia can only take so much.
Right.
If Putin won't respond, they'll get Putin out,
mm-hmm.
and they'll put in a leadership that will fight. And that's because their history, their heritage of struggle is too great, and it's too recent for them to just roll over without a fight. So, but I think the main thing, Cindy, is that it's the truth of the matter is the exact opposite of what we in the United States
right,
are being fed.
Sure.
And that the main perpetrator of war over the Ukraine is none other than U.S. imperialism.
Well, it really is striking that, you know, we see the U.S. and NATO, you know, NATO, really, you can't separate
right.
the U.S. from or NATO
oh.
from the U.S.
Oh.
You know, the UN
Amen.
Seems to be the UN seems to be like a foreign policy stamp of approval for the United States almost all the time, and NATO, of course, is just another army. It's another army for the United States. Mm-hmm. So we
and it's an army. Excuse me, but it's an army that only the U.S. can command.
Right. So we see NATO like doing exercises, or the U.S. It doesn't matter. Like right on the border of Russia, and if Russia responds with exercises of its own in its own sovereign territory, they're called the aggressors.
Right. Yeah.
So, and we see, especially we talked about Iraq a little bit, that the U.S. admits that they tried to provoke Saddam Hussein into some kind of attack against the United States in 2003, so we wouldn't have to appear like we're the aggressor. So it's just a pattern. I've lost so much support again from people because I am calling out U.S. imperialism on this issue, and people are like, oh, but Putin's evil. We have to do something about Putin.
Yeah. And in reality, as I said a few minutes ago, even this Princeton professor revealed the fact that Putin is getting criticism in Russia, not for being too aggressive against the U.S., but for rolling over too much for the U.S. aggression.
How related to in a recent interview we talked about the Asia pivot in China.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you think this situation in Ukraine and Russia relates to that?
Well, that's a good question, and I know when the United States under Bush went into Afghanistan, that some of the reason for that aggressive move of the coalition of the unwilling, as I call it, was to try to break into that area so that there would be a base for the United States that could split Russia and China, which were becoming closer and closer,
right,
militarily as well as in other ways. And there's no doubt that there's a concern about that on the part of the United States imperialists. China in itself is such a rising power, but Russia's probably the main country that it can ally with, that has quite a bit of firepower.
Well, China spends, in a relatively speaking, China, relative to the United States, spends very little on its military.
It's still quite significant, and it's growing.
But in relation to the, it's like, very small compared to the United States.
Yeah, and so is every other country in the world compared to the United States.
But China has the most people of any other country. So you would think that the country with the most people, you know, doesn't even, it pales in comparison to what the United States spends on its military and on empire.
It's changing. That's all I can
say. Well, because China is waking up and going, you know, oh my God, you know, look at the U.S. It's starting to isolate us militarily.
Mm-hmm.
So what, as a rational, you know, thinking being, what would your response be?
Well, I think you've answered your question about the significance of this, the war on Russia and Putin that they're waging and its connection to China. I think you've answered that question.
And then people always are like, oh.
But China, I just want to say, China is not a communist country. It's not a socialist country. It's a major capitalist power.
Absolutely.
That has tremendous outreach into the rest of the world. And in some respects, that's a positive thing because it means that U.S. imperialism no longer is the unrivaled hegemonic power that it's been. So there's an opportunity for revolutionary forces wherever they are, and wherever they emerge, to take advantage of those divisions. Those are, as I said in an earlier episode, that's one of the fundamental contradictions that Lenin talks about, that face imperialism, that plague imperialism in that highest and last dying stage of capitalism, is the contradiction among these major powers. And now, again, we're seeing the emergence of a major economic power. And that major economic power, China, is also beginning to flex its military muscle, not nearly as aggressively and as belligerently as U.S. imperialism is doing. And it may well not become as belligerent as U.S. imperialism, because U.S. imperialism is in decline.
Mm-hmm.
And a power that's in decline is a much more dangerous force. And when it feels cornered, and this U.S. imperialist power economically is already feeling cornered, then it can really lash out in every way, including militarily.
Right.
So I don't. When I say these things about China, that's not to say that China's the main danger of war. I don't believe that. Not at this point. The main danger of major war is U.S. imperialism.
Absolutely.
Today,
yeah.
You know, so, and that, as it has been for some time.
Martin Luther King Jr. said that in 1967 that you know, the quote's not going to be to me right now.
Well, he said that the U.S. was the main perpetrator of violence
in
the world.
Right, that's it. Yeah. That's it. That hasn't changed.
No, it hasn't. Yet.
Unfortunately, no matter how much we sacrifice, how many times we you know, do what we do, but the collapse, I think that my role is to just, like, hasten that.
Absolutely.
You know, we might not be the ones with the revolution, with the machine guns or whatever, but we are, everything I do is pointed towards the hastening of the collapse of the U.S. empire.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
Because what is an empire? I mean, an empire is the opposite of equality.
Right.
The empire is the opposite of justice. So for people who love justice and equality, fairness. Mm-hmm. Then and I know you are a deep lover of peace. Mm-hmm. And so for anybody that has those sentiments, then we have to be enemies of empire. And if we happen to live in the belly of that beast, mm-hmm. all the more so we have a responsibility to be enemies of that
empire. And to be in solidarity with people in the struggle all over the world that are struggling against the empire. I wish we're running out of time again. I wish we had time to talk about where I see some promising revolutionary movements happening in Latin America, South America, but...
We haven't heard the end of the Arab Spring yet either, and Black Lives Matter is something that can be spread to oppressed peoples everywhere.
Right. Okay, so, Ray, I just want to mention that we have the newsletter, Rail Light USA, is at Cindy Sheehan's soapbox.
Revolutionary Organization of Labor USA, where we have Rail Light newsletter.
Right.
I know it's complicated.
Right, and that is at the Soapbox People's Network. And whenever we bring you on as a guest, we feature those links on the newsletter.
Oh, great.
So
you need to come on more often then.
Yeah, but you already have the prominent place in our hearts and on our website.
Right.
So, Ray Light, thank you so much again for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
And thank you for being you, Cindy.
Okay. Well, I tried to be somebody else for a while and it didn't work. No. So I thought I'd just simplify and become myself.
Okay,
Ray, thank you. Well, that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired. And as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, and my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller, who has been in and out of the hospital due to treatment for breast cancer. And so I'd like you to send your healing thoughts or prayers or whatever you do. And I'd like to thank Ray Light for his work and for his willingness to be on the Soapbox to enlighten us. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.